Okay, 3 o'clock. You can start our class now, huh? A very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is quite a special day, 4th of April 2021. It's actually a Sunday, and it also coincides with our Chinese festival, Qing Ming Day, Easter Sunday, also, my daughter said. So, Qing Ming is Tomb Sweeping Day in Chinese, Sao Bo. So, those who observe that tradition, they may either choose a day to go and do it, and pay their respect and develop the piety. Okay, as usual, we will continue from our sharing from this book, the five aggregates of form and mind, based on the direct transcript from my recorded talk given in the year 2005. Okay, let us compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya, and mindfully we shall commence the puja chanting. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Pho. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Pho. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Pho. Namo Guansin Pusa. Namo Guansin Pusa. Namo Guansin Pusa. Namo Amitabha Pho. 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 Namo Milafo. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Tisangwang Pusa. Namo Tisangwang Pusa. Namo Tisangwang Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Arahaṃ sammā sambuddho bhagavā buddhaṃ bhagavantaṃ abhivādemi. Suvakāto bhagavata dhammo dhammaṃ namasāmi. Supatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho sanghaṃ namāmi. Namo attassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo attassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo attassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Pāṇātipātā vairamane sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Ādinādāna vairamane sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Kāmesu micācāra vairamane sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Musawada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami Suramiraya majapamadatana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Pujan. Bhutang Pujayami. Dhammang Pujayami. Sanghang Pujayami. Okay, you all can be seated. Just relax body and mind, maintain some of our attention, then we will start the sharing again. We will go to page 32 and continue. So today's sharing will be very good because like I asked you all the previous Sunday to go back and read it out. I hope most of you have already read the thing, then it will benefit you when I share this. You listen, this explains to you clearly how you function as a human being, how your mind actually creates the delusion to deceive the cultivator that don't have the understanding or the heedless people. The mind is very tricky and it is very deceiving. This is very true. These two words you have to always bear in mind heedfully. It is tricky, yeah, it tricks you into believing things. Then it deceives you by telling you the wrong thing. I read again. The mind is very tricky and it is very deceiving because it creates a lot of things through our sense or consciousness. Every time it creates through the arising of the sense or consciousness, thinking will follow or arise. Then feeling will also arise. Then when you input the content of consciousness, attachment, craving, desire, all will arise. And then you will be trapped because you don't have the Dhamma understanding. You don't have wisdom. You don't have uniso manasikara. So through your thinking and thought processes, you will create all the dualities and concept. Sorry, they will create all the dualities and concept for you to attach. That is the reason why J. Krishnamurti said thought divine. So this words are very powerful, the meanings are very deep. You can see the power of thought to divine and the limitation of thought, then you can go beyond thought, you can awaken. Because thought, in a sense, is limited, as I explained before. Do you know how we create thought? Our true mind is actually spacious awareness without a center, nothing. Then before our mundane thinking arises, before our mundane mind arises, this spacious awareness, they will shrink into a small space where our mundane mind try to perceive something. It's like seeing consciousness, that thing that we try to see, like the Buddha image or what. So the awareness shrink to that space, then we input the content of consciousness through memory and perception, we actually created the thought. So that perception of the Buddha Rupang, Buddha image and all those things is the name, the label that we create. So thought, suddenly from spacious awareness, the true mind, they shrink into a small space where we input the content of consciousness and it trickle off and become a thought. That's why thought is limited. Instead of spacious awareness, it is that one. That thought has the power to trick us and deceive us. So that delusion comes from sacrality, self-delusion. We believe the thought. We believe the feeling that arises us. We believe there is a person, egoic mind, doing the thinking, doing the seeing, the hearing, the smell, the taste, the tactile, and the thought process. Then thought, through its memory and its conditioning and belief system, divides through what? Through words. So I read on, then you will understand. Through your thinking and thought processes, they will create all the dualities and concepts for you to attach. That is the reason why J. Krishnamurti said thought will divide. Why does he say that? Take for example, thought creates the word religion or race or whatever. So take for example the word religion. And it starts to divide religion into Buddhism, Christianity, Islam, Baha'i, Hinduism, etc. and the rest. When that happens, if you are not mindful, heedful, then you become deceived by that word. Then when you try to believe that you are a Buddhist or you are a Christian, you will protect that religion that you believe you are holding on to. So that's how it will divide you from others. Means, even though on this planet all human beings are just human beings, but when you divide yourself through all these words created by thought, even the word religion and race alone, it starts to divide humanity. That's how the conflict, the misunderstanding, the war, the misery, the suffering, all can arise. So this understanding is very important. So religion, through words, or what they call concept and ideology, can create a lot of division in life. Even for living beings, they will differentiate and create a concept of male and female, young and old, youth and middle age, even race. That is the reason why if you are not able to see clearly what form is, you will attach to form. Take for example when you look at KC, KC that time was Chinese, I think middle age, about 40 plus years old. You immediately think he is a Chinese, right? The word race, the age, the gender can describe Casey as a Chinese middle age male, etc. And because of that, living being develop attachment to race, your gender, your age, and also your religious belief. This can give rise to a lot of unnecessary argument, conflicts and misunderstanding, because you unknowingly accepted such division or categorization. Then you are given a name such as Casey or Mr. Chang or Mr. Wan. That label creates the I, the ego mind, or the you, the personality. Just like when you are dealing with the sense of consciousness just now, when seeing arise, if you are mindful, heedful, it's only the seeing consciousness. There is no one to see as yet before you input the content of consciousness, before the sakayatiti goes in, self-delusion. But because of sakayatiti or self-delusion and ignorance, we created the thinking that says, I see. You associate with the seeing. From here, can you inquire further? Who is that I who sees? That's like if you were to silence your mind and observe, reflect, contemplate, that is meditation. Then you start to understand how does the ego arise? How does the personality arise? How does sakkādhiti come to be? Then that time I ask anyone want to try to answer that. When you say, I see, what is that capital I that you are referring to? I think after that somebody answered. I said, no. The English word, capital I, the ego, I see. But the five aggregate do not see. Because somebody answered the five of mind. A lot of people will say, my I see, which is quite logical, isn't it? Because without I cannot see. Then how do you answer him? Is he right or is he wrong? He said, his I see. E-Y-E-S. Is that right? You have to probe into this. Is there any truth in what he said? That is one way to answer it. Sorry, that is one way of answering it. But that answer is actually logical, but need not be the truth. Is there any other way to understand it? He said his eyes see. You have to ask him. Because he may not know about the five aggregates of form and mind. But now that you have studied the five aggregates of form and mind, which is very important, this understanding can help you. We can start by asking him. We can start probing by asking him, are your eyes responsible for seeing? You must listen to this carefully. It will give you good understanding. The eyes, the physical organ, is only one of the conditions that give rise to the seeing consciousness. The eyes alone do not see. Just as Brother Wong said, without mind, how can the eye see? You ask a dead man to open his eye and ask him to see. He does not see. Can you follow? At night, certain people, when they are asleep with their eyes open, do they see? They do not see. That is why understanding condition, existence and phenomena are very important. If you cannot understand phenomena, you cannot understand mind. Because the understanding of phenomena is key to the understanding of mind. And the understanding of mind is key to the understanding of the five aggregates of form and mind. You have to understand this very clearly because the eye is only one of the organs responsible, meaning one of the conditions that give rise to the seeing consciousness. The other thing you need is external sense data in the form of color, shape or form. Then you need the mind to make contact. The mind is key, just like what Brother Wong said. Because without mind, there is no knowing. When there is no knowing, there is no seeing. Do you follow? But is there really an I that see? A personality or an ego? What is this so-called personality or ego? Our sister here said the eye is a five aggregates of form and mind. If you call the five aggregate of form and mind eye, then you are calling a compounded thing the eye. Then can I ask you, is your body really you? The five aggregates of form and mind, your physical form and mental aggregates, are they really you? If not, then who are you? What are you? That's how you should probe. To understand you, truth, you need to understand who are you and what are you. If you do not even know who are you and what are you, then how can you understand from a mind? How can you understand the reality and truth? Who are you? What are you? I will give you a hint. How do you know the world? How do you interact with the world? Let me go back to basic. It is like going back to school. But schools never teach this understanding. You have to know who are you and what are you. So how do you know the world? Through what? We have already gone through that. Through your perception. Remember? You need your senses. Without your senses, you cannot know. Your form and mind comes back again. You need the mind and the physical senses to arise the respective sense of consciousness and your perception to know. That is why they say man is the greatest magician. Man creates the world of consciousness. That is the reason why the Buddha gave the five very important analogies to the five aggregates. First, he said form or rupa is like foam. Have you heard of this before? When you wash with soap, the foam appears as a white, as one white solid mass. It looks very solid, but after a while it just wither off and there is nothing left. It is not solid at all. He said our rupang or form is just like that, not so real. Then he said feeling is like a bubble. What is a bubble? It pops, arises and disappears. Pops, arises and disappears. So feeling is momentary, come and go. But when you are in a retreat, during your sitting, when you are in certain posture that creates a lot of pain, you will ask yourself, how is it this pain does not go away? It always arises. Not to say it does not go away, actually it is never there. But because your mind clings to that sensation and you are not relaxed, that phenomenon tends to make you attached to it. You think that your body, sorry, you think that very body is your, is very real, is what you are. Then you think the pain is associated with you because you think this body is you. But very few people can actually see that. You have to learn to see through that, because this body, as we had earlier on discussed before, there are three types of suffering, remember? One is within this physical form, suffering within form. They call it dukkha dukkata. The dukkha that arises within this form is karmically bound to us. So it is a karmic arising. When this physical body ages and becomes diseased, or there is a wound or a cut or an injury or whatever, or when you sit in a certain posture that constrict the flow of qi, then pain arises. This type of dukkha within the form is not easy to penetrate unless you really have the meditative wisdom to see its reality and learn to endure it with proper contemplative wisdom and understanding. Your mind can only develop the wisdom not to cling if you are able to see clearly what these things are. The attachment of your mind can only arise after the wisdom. The detachment of your mind can only arise after the wisdom has come about. That is after you have known the body for what it is, and that the body is not you. Just like the way we see form, form is unreal, form is impermanent, form is condition arising, form has no permanent unchanging entity or nature of its own. It is non-self. Not until you see that and penetrate it with real insight, you can never free yourself. You will always cling. That's the reason why I say unless you can see form, understand the unreality of form, then only you can see beyond form. So all this understanding we have gone through. So now I like let you recollect and develop the understanding. I've already discussed feeling, right? Now we discussed the third aggregate of perception, which is more interesting. Do you know what is its analogy? I think Casey will know. Ah yes, it's like a mirage. Yes, that is the answer. Why did the Buddha say perception is like a mirage? Everybody knows what a mirage is. In the desert, when you are very thirsty, you may see a mirage and you think the pond of water is really there. Mind you, that is what the Buddha said. That's why perception is unreal. It's only a mirage. Because you created it through your consciousness, your mundane mind. Only a mental formation or image here pointing to the forehead that appears so real. It is similar for all the external form you create and bring to mind through your sense perception. That's why when you understand what a phenomena is, because the phenomena is anything that is perceivable by the senses is a phenomena, then you will understand. Then you will understand and develop the insight to know that all external phenomena are just sense perception. That is what external form is all about. External form is tied to the external phenomena. When you understand phenomena, you understand form. Then you will understand mind. If you cannot see phenomena, you will not be able to see form. You will not be able to see mind. Is it that difficult to understand? That time I asked the audience. So for the third aggregates of perception, remember the analogy is it's like a mirage. It is the reason why perception is unreal, because appear real but may not be it. That is just an image created by consciousness. How real can it be? It's just like the bullock cart analogy, remember earlier on we went through? Externally, we know through our understanding of science and technology and life experiences. The bullock cart arises because of the parts coming together, the condition for them to come together. Then it performs a function, you give it a name and a concept, then it arises really. And because its condition arising impermanent is not what you think. Because when you dismantle the parts, the condition they give rise to it, then the bullock cart ceases to be. So externally already not so real. Then the Buddha asks us to reflect and contemplate. How do we know that it's a bullock cart? We know it because we perceive it through the seeing consciousness. And what is perception? Perception is just sanya, the Pali word. It's an image, mental image, created by our thought process. That's why it's mental formation. It's just an image. How real can it be? Externally, already not so real, dependent originating condition arising. Then how do we know? It's a block. We know it through a mental consciousness. An image which is even more unreal. Then why do we cling on to it? Hold on to it? give meaning and attach to it. That is delusion, isn't it? We know it's mind made, created by mind. Then the views, the opinion, the conditioning come in and create duality. Beautiful, new, old, shabby or whatever. You will label that block. So all this arise through consciousness, through the content of consciousness that we input through our views, opinion and mental conditioning, belief system, etc. So all this is what the aggregates of minds are. So when we understand this, we can unlock the secret of life. We can come to understand the true nature of things, the unreality of form. Then the form aggregate is even more interesting. This will lead you to understand anatta or see clearly what anatta is. Anyone want to try and give the answer? Realim. So the answer is sankhara. Yes, the Buddha said that it is sankhara. But the analogy is the Buddha said sankhara is like a banana stem. Has anyone peeled a banana stem before? You cut out the trunk and you peel it layer by layer. What do you get at the end? There is nothing in it. At the end, at the core of it, because when you peel layer after layer, at the center, there is no core. It is empty. In this way, you can better understand the empty nature of sankhara, thinking, mental activity, content of consciousness. It's only your thought or activity of mind and your sankhara arising due to condition and your views, opinion, conditioning and your belief system. When there is mind contact with sense data and sense organ, the respective sense door consciousness will arise. Then this consciousness, they come and they go. Consciousness keep on arising, thought keep on arising, perception keep on arising, and your mental activity, etc., keep on arising. And they are all not real, not what you think. How do they arise? They arise through your mind. When you perceive them to be your problem, you created them through your wrong thought, born of delusion. That's why the Noble Eightfold Path is very clear. Right view leading to right thought is very important. You need to have the right effort to develop the right thought, because thoughts condition feeling. If you are not careful with thought, it can make you miserable. It can give rise to suffering. Well, all things that brings about suffering or dukkha are due to your conditioned thinking born of wrong view. Wrong view that condition wrong thought. Because of your wrong thought, born of ignorance, you tend to grasp at those things that you think are real, born of your attachment to the external forms or aggregates of rupa. We have not come to mind yet. When you come to mind, it's even more complicated. When you are attached to your aggregates of mind, it is worse. This is only external form. But because form can give rise to so much meaning to delude and deceive you, to lure and trap you, you have to be very, very careful, very mindful and heedful. Just now, we discussed the physical body and all those things that you differentiate and discriminate. We discussed young Chinese race, etc. But when you start to see clearly all this, that all these are created by thought to delude you, what must you do? Now you start to understand why the Buddha say, mind is the forerunner of all things, mind is chief. When mind arises, that is your mundane mind, everything arises. So you must learn to see beyond form. What is the meaning of seeing beyond form? Do not only look at the physical or outward appearances or external form, because without wisdom, the external form will divide and create a lot of delusion and attachment. You will attach to your religion, your appearances, your age, your gender, etc., as described earlier on. That is why they say some people's view are very strong, their opinions are very strong, because they attach to external form. They are attached to labor, words, concept, especially religious labor, and that is why they fight, kill, and do all sorts of things in the name of religion. They argue and they go to war. Similarly, in the name of nationality, country, in the name of their race, and so on. If you are not able to see clearly what this form is all about, how it deludes you and create all the confusion and attachment in you, then you will not be able to see beyond form. But once you have the ability to see the unreality of form, yeah, it's just an image, it's all dependent on originating, then you say, hey, why should I look at Casey based on his external appearances, which is the form? Casey is not just the external form, the physical body. If I see beyond that form, what do I see? The normal division created by thought is no more, isn't it? There is no more labeling based on that form that he is a male or a female. He is young or old. He is Chinese, etc., or Buddhist. All this division created by form disappear, right? I do not have so much problem anymore. Is that not so? So if you can see beyond form, beyond the physical appearances, then as human being, we are not much different. We are the color, the race, the religion, the gender, the age, all those things doesn't come in and interfere. Then what do I see? I see the mind inside. Is there still any difference between your mind and Casey's mind or other people's mind when you look into their mind? By looking beyond this form, what do you see? You see the mind is without gender, without age, without appearances. So this mind has more common commonalities. Has more commonalities. We are just human beings. You have a mind, I have a mind. That's it, finish. But when you really aware and mindful, you can see there are still differences. Because each and every one of us, we can still have our own views and opinion of things. And this understanding is very important. That is why he is still different. That is why between two persons, even if you do not look at the physical difference, at the mental level, he will still argue with you, fight with you, because of his views, opinions, and conditionings, which are so strong. Especially the religious belief system. There is attachment to views and opinions, etc. This is the mental part, which is more complicated because it is invisible, less tangible, and it is so deceiving. It can really trap living beings. That is the reason why we must keep an open mind. Whatever you do not understand, try to develop the understanding first. Do not cling to your views and opinion and start arguing. To give rise to misunderstanding through argument, and having difference of opinions. No point doing all this because everything is just the way it is. The reality is just that. So, means to see things as they are, to see truth. The reality is suchness. Nature is just the way it is. When you see beyond the physical form, you can look at the mind. There are still these differences, means views, opinion and conditioning. Yes, we are conditioned by our teachers, our parents, the media, the education, the books we read, our education system, the school and all that influences us. They condition us and we can only accept or agree to whatever that is acceptable to us. Then you manifest, live and act in accordance with those views, opinion and conditioning, whereas you do not want to develop the understanding of the truth. You think that is what you are. Then again, you are deluded because your views and opinions are going to block you. It is giving you a lot of, it's going to create a lot of attachment and suffering within you. Conflict, misunderstanding. But when you have the ability to develop the meditative cultivation, especially the cultivation of the four foundations of mindfulness and the Noble Eightfold Path to friction, your form and mind will cease. Then you will be able to see beyond mind. When you are able to see beyond mind, all your views, opinion, attachment, conditioning, duality created by mind will collapse. They will no longer deceive you. And true understanding born of wisdom, born of seeing reality, the direct seeing will arise. And enlightenment in the here and the now is possible. So this is how you learn to see beyond form, then beyond mind. Then when you see beyond form, beyond mind, each and every one of us is the same. We have a true nature. Everyone has that nature which is pristine, pure. Then there is no difference. That's why all of humanity is one. Because that is our original nature, our true nature, not what you think. That's why one is all is one. We are all related. We belong to the oneness. Regarding the five aggregates analogy, just now I stopped at the fourth aggregate, Sankara. The Sankara analogy pertains to the empty nature of phenomena and things. Remember that analogy of the banana stem? You peel it layer after layer and there is nothing in the center, in the core. At the core of its existence, there is nothing. Basically empty. So what the Buddha tried to tell us is that whatever your mind or your sankara creates through its sense or perception of all the external form are not real. They are all empty. That is the reason why it is empty, not what you think. All of phenomena are unreal, dependent originating, condition arising, they come and they go. Depending on conditions. They arise because of condition, they sustain their existence because of supporting condition, and they cease to be when conditions cease to be. When you understand this very clearly and profoundly, you will be able to understand the empty nature of existence. Finally, it's only your thought, not what you think. So not so real. There is just consciousness, the phenomenal world of consciousness. Everything arises and passes away because of condition. Each year you waver. That is the reason why Venerable Sariputta was able to realize enlightenment upon hearing just two verses from Venerable Asajj. But he met Venerable Asanji, who was one of the five ascetics who heard the first sermon, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, from the Buddha. Venerable Asanji was so serene, so peaceful and so calm. So Venerable Sariputta knew this monk was special, very different from the other monks. So he decided to approach him. But he waited until Venerable Asanji had finished his pindapata and had his meal. And as he was about to return to where he came from, Sariputta approached him and asked, "May I know who is your teacher? And what is it that he teaches?" Venerable Asanji, being very humble, replied, "I do not know much." Then Sariputta, who is a very wise person, said, "Do not worry, I do not need much from you. I only need to know what your teacher told you. Just repeat what little you know, that is enough for me." This was because Sariputta was the foremost in wisdom, and he had very strong parami behind him. When he listened to any truth, not necessary from the Buddha, he could also become enlightened. So when Asanji said, "This is what my teacher taught," he said, "Whatever that arises in this world, there are causes and conditions behind." Then he said the second verse, "These causes and conditions my master has explained." Do you know what happened after that? After hearing these two stanzas or verses, Venerable Sariputta became a Sotapan. He realized the first stage of sainthood. Venerable Sariputta, upon hearing that truth, became enlightened, because his wisdom was very high. Now, hope you understand. This is what I have been trying to explain to you all. Please pay attention and contemplate this. The second turning of the first noble truth clearly states that this noble truth or dukkha is to be understood. You have to understand it. And to understand this, the Buddha summarized all of suffering as clinging or grasping to the five aggregates of form and mind, the upadana khandhas. There is a reason why the form and mind is so important. I try to develop for you the understanding of this form and mind by explaining what is a phenomenon. If you cannot understand what a phenomenon is, you will not be able to understand mind. If you cannot understand mind, you cannot understand form and mind. If you cannot understand form and mind, you cannot penetrate the truth. It is very difficult for you to understand the second turning. Even the first aggregate of form, I tried very hard to make it simple for you to understand, but it's not easy. Luckily, it's recorded. You can listen to it slowly. But ignore the first part, because all this while I am not used to holding a microphone. Oh, sorry. But ignore the first part, because all this while I am not used to holding a microphone. So when I started holding the microphone, I did not know what happened. I cannot hold on to things. So it becomes unnatural. So when I hold on to something, the Dhamma cannot come out or flow from the heart as naturally as it used to be. Luckily, you all fix the problem. Then after that, after you fix the mind problem, the flow is more natural, because many things that come out from me are not what I say. I cannot speak from memory anymore. Whatever that comes out, the I, in inverted commas, speaks from its nature. But if the conditions are not there, it cannot come out. I also do not know why. Do not ask me why. So this form of mind is very important. We have already discussed the fourth aggregate sankhara. The last one, the fifth aggregate, is vijnanam, or consciousness. This is very important. The fifth aggregate of form of mind is also termed the fourth aggregate of mind. Do you know the analogy the Buddha gave? You will get a shock of your life when you hear it. He said, the last aggregates of mind, vijnanam, or consciousness, is like a magician. This vijnanam is just like a magician. There is a reason why, just now, I told you, you are the greatest magician on earth, because you can create almost everything that you see and perceive in this universe. When you open your eye, everything within your seeing consciousness is already created. The world has come into being immediately. The whole of existence has arisen. That is why the Buddha said, mind is a foreigner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, all things arise. Means the mind right things that you come to perceive arise. Mind is the forerunner of all things, and because of sense door consciousness, whenever you see, hear, smell, taste, touch, and think, the respective consciousness will arise to create the world of phenomena. The whole phenomenal world of consciousness. That is the reason why just now, when I ask who are you and what are you, it's not easy for you all to understand. The key to understanding this is to ask yourself, how do you know the world? We know the world through our six senses or six sendo. Is that not so? And we know the world through our mind that creates the sense door consciousness and the sense perception. And how do you interact with the world? Again, it is through our five aggregates of form and mind. And our mental sense door consciousness. Through our thinking. Through our thought process. Through our views, our opinion, etc. This is what living beings are all about, or human beings are all about. So we have to ask ourselves, who are we? What are we? Do these bodies really belong to us? Is this body really you? You have to ask yourself that. Try to understand that. Contemplate that to develop the understanding. I used to give the analogy of the car and the driver to explain this. For discussion purpose, you can inquire, is this body really you? Someone answered, no. That is a very good answer. Apart from that, any other answer? This is also one way of seeing it. Yeah? There was another answer. And it's quite good. However, many people who are non-Buddhists will not agree. As Buddhists, we take quite a lot of things for granted because we understand the teachings of the Buddha. That is why we say it is not really us. But other people may ask, how can you say it is not me? I want to eat, I eat. I want to walk, I walk. I want to do anything I can do. Why do you say this body is not me? I have full control over myself. I want to commit suicide also, I can. I want to die. I can just die. I want to scold you. I can do it. They may also say, I want to be loving and kind. Also, I can. Then why do you say it's not me? How do you answer them? Then somebody tried. Then I said, that is a very close answer, just like the question on seeing and the eye just now. Is it your physical eye that see? Of course not. What is it that see is a combination of condition. the eye alone do not see. The eyes are only one of the conditions that exist in seeing. It is a supporting condition for seeing consciousness to arise. Likewise, this body is exactly the same. That is why the form and mind is not easy to comprehend. The ability to control does not mean you own it or it belongs to you. I want to share this analogy that I used previously. This analogy is quite close, but not exact. You assume that this very body and mind are synonymous to a car and a driver. This is the car and the driver analogy. Let us say the car is in perfect condition. Everything is there. The petrol, the engine, etc. They are all functioning. The driver, being a skillful driver, can drive and have control over the car. If he wants to accelerate, he can. If he wants to brake, he can. If he wants to turn, he can. And if he wants to execute all the other functions allowable by that car, he can. But you can see very clearly, the driver is the driver and the car is the car. Right? But why is it that when it's in your body, the mind, together with the physical body, you cannot see that the two are separate? Why? When it is the driver and the car, they are so clear to you. The two entities are different. One controls the other. Likewise, the mind also controls your physical body. But you never see. That is why it develops the real seeing. That is why to develop the real seeing, you have to reflect within. Hui Guang Fan Zhao. Mahayana Buddhists always said, Hui Guang Fan Zhao. Meaning, you have to reverse the light and see within, or look within. In other words, turn and shine the light within into your mind ground to see clearly. And you will understand how all mental formation arise in your mind. Then you will see how all these are created by your mind. The mind is the one that instructs you through its mental volition or intention. That is why if you can see very clearly, you will come to realize that this physical body is just an external manifestation of your mind. Because there is this mind within that causes mental intention to create all the movements, such as intention to eat, intention to walk, plus all those activities created by mind. It's just like the driver. But there is a limit to what this body can do. That is the reason why it is just one of the supporting conditions behind its arising. Because the karmic force that come together with it. That is the reason why it is just one of the supporting conditions behind its arising. Because of the karmic force that comes together with it. But this physical body of ours take a much longer time to arise and disappear. It is also a phenomenon like sound, except that the sound phenomenon is very short. Hence, the conditions are very clear and easy for us to understand. However, because this body takes a longer time to cease, we overlook it as a phenomenon. We think it is real. This is the reason why I say it is not real. If somebody is paralyzed from the waist down and you ask him to walk, he cannot walk. Even if he wants to walk, he cannot walk. So you can see very clearly that it is not the body that walks. It is the mind together with the body that is in the functional state that gives rise to the condition for it to walk. When the conditions are there, then it can perform the function of walking. Just like the case of the car and the driver. If the engine has no problem, the car will be the driver. But if, let's say, there is no petrol, no matter how skillful the driver is, the car will not move. Or if there is a problem with the engine, the car cannot move. Just like the body, when it's paralyzed, it cannot walk. So it is not you, not what you think. Can you understand? It is just a phenomenon that arises because of birth. And then there is a sustained phase of growth leading to aging and dying. So this body is not really you because of its impermanent nature. It goes the way of nature. It arises because of the biological order. This physical body is governed by the biological order of nature. It's part of the nature's law. All the food that you eat, the air that you breathe, and the water you drink sustain this body. The way you wash it, clean it, and maintain its health are all dependent on the karmic inheritance behind it. If your karmic force is such that it is time to go, no matter how well you may try to take care of it, it will still go. Death will still occur. But when the physical body dies, what actually happened? Living beings take death as somebody died. They say, somebody died. But the actual meaning is different. You can see clearly. It's just this mental part or consciousness that's separate from the physical body. And they call this death. When the physical body is devoid of consciousness, what will happen to the physical body? It decays, goes the way of nature, and you can feel no more pain. You can do an autopsy on it, cut it, and there is still no pain. It does not know what is going on because there is no more consciousness. All the consciousness of seeing, smell, taste, tactile, etc. are all gone. So when this physical body is devoid of consciousness and the other supporting condition, it behaves differently, and it is no more you, the entity erased. It becomes only element and it returns to nature. So that is the reason why the body is not you. I hope this part is clear. Now the magician part. Do you all understand that part? The Buddha said, the consciousness is the greatest magician. Why is consciousness given, why is this consciousness analogy is a magician? Magician creates illusion for audience to see. Is that not so? Look at all the great magicians. They create illusion. It appears as if they create magic, but it's only an illusion. It looks real, but it is actually not real. Your sense of consciousness is the same. When seeing consciousness arise, it creates the whole sense sphere of seeing. The existential world that you perceive through your seeing consciousness will arise as explained just now. There are external conditions behind the arising, just like the air conditioner, etc. But the knowing is by the mental part that perceives the external form through your mind. So there are two aspects to the arising. The external, nature's condition, and the mental condition for the arising. That is why all these forms that are external to your mind are not real, in the sense that they arise because of condition. One is nature's condition, depending on the pancha niyamas. Just like the table, the aircon, how do they arise? There must be condition behind the arising. Secondly, it is through your mental knowing, your mental perception, and your mind's creation. Your mind, after having made contact with the sense organ and the sense data, give rise to sense dual consciousness. In this case, the seeing consciousness. Then you perceive and brings the external form into the mind. So all these are condition arising entity. Because they are condition arising, they are impermanent. do you see the anicca characteristic and the impermanent nature of form? When you see this, you will understand the empty nature of form. Form is not real, just like this physical body. They come and they go. When conditions for their arising are no more, they cease to be. And they also cease to be when the consciousness leaves the body. Then it is no more you, because there is no more feeling, there is nothing. Its element returns to nature. Is that clear? Means without the supporting condition, the entity ceases to be. And when the entity ceases to be, the so-called human being also ceases to be. Yeah? Tonight I tried very hard to make you all understand the unreality of form. I also do not know how to put it in words, because there are so many aspects to developing this understanding of the first noble truth of dukkha, especially the five aggregates of form and mind. The first aggregate of form is two aspects, is very important, and tonight we stress a lot on the first aggregate of form. We have not really gone into the other four aggregates of mind yet. There are many aspects to this first aggregate of form. Whatever that comes with the condition tonight, my nature just spoke on it. So there is still a lot which I do not know why they do not come out or do not flow. Maybe it's not the time yet. We have to wait for the appropriate condition and timing. So at that time, 205, because I believe the nature know that cultivators are not ready, people cannot follow. That's why a lot of things that the nature understand cannot come out. We are not time yet. Then after that, we continue. We have another 10 minutes. Maybe we should open up for question. Okay, we stop here, because it's already 4:07. We're supposed to have our meditation. We stop at the last paragraph of page 48. Okay. Okay. So now we will off the light, and you can have your 45 minutes of silent awareness meditation. Just relax body and mind. Silent your mind. Then relax, maintain awareness, and let the mundane mind slow down, settle down, so that you can realize your true mind, your awareness nature within. Then use that to meditate. Okay, I'll let you meditate on your own. I will set the alarm for 45 minutes. Thank you. Okay. Slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Yeah. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner mindfulness or awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. These are the mind states that you need to use when you go through life. Then you need to develop the stability of the daily mindfulness in order to really develop the progress and wisdom. Okay. Before we continue from where we stopped, we are at page 48, I think. We will have 3 minutes of toilet break, then you come back. Now it's 4:55, 4:58, we come back. Okay, so 3 minutes of toilet break, yeah? Okay, we'll continue from where we stopped, just now we're about page 47, towards the end of the last paragraph. We have another 10 minutes. Maybe we should open up for Q&A, questions. Anyone has any question? Yeah, then somebody asks a question. That is a very good question. You see, What we are sharing tonight is the second turning of the first noble truth. This second turning of the first noble truth can let us understand dukkha clearly. The Buddha said under the second turning proclamation, this noble truth of dukkha is to be understood. So we should inquire why the Buddha said that, and how can we understand this truth. I initially led you all to this understanding, but finally the reason why we need to discuss the five aggregates of form and mind is because the Buddha has summarized all of dukkha as the clinging to these five aggregates of form and mind, or upadana khandas, the grasping aggregate. So for that reason, we must dwell deeply into them to develop the clear understanding. So actually the question was this. So we come to the part question and answer 4. Section 4. First question, question 1. How do we relate all this to meditation? Means what we have taught you and what we have discussed and developed. So I answered him this way. You listen. Brown Wong's question is, how do you relate all this that you have learned? Oh, sorry, you have taught us to meditation. So this question is very important. What I have tried tonight is to help develop the condition for your initial understanding to arise. Then this will help prepare you to have the base and the condition to receive the truth subsequently. If you do not have the understanding of what these five aggregates of form and mind are, then how to see form, the unreality of form, and how to see the empty nature of form and phenomena, and how to see beyond form, then it will not be easy to develop the awakening to meditation. But once you are able to grasp this understanding, it will develop within you a very strong base to receive truth, to receive wisdom. And the next time you listen and reflect on what we have taught, on what has been taught and contemplated. And the next time you listen and reflect on what has been taught, the contemplative understanding and wisdom leading to the enlightenment in the here and the now will be possible. Because this is the second turning wisdom. Born of reflection and contemplation on the truth, Cittamaya Panya, as proclaimed by the Buddha. If you reflect and contemplate on it, you will develop a different type of understanding, and based on what I have explained, it will straighten your views. It will strengthen your understanding of the five aggregates of form and mind. When you see this very clearly after cultivating the meditative practice, it will be a lot easier for you to develop the true wisdom and insight knowledges required to trigger enlightenment. Sati, supported by right understanding or right view with regards to the law of karma, the four noble truths, and the law of cause and effect, or paticca-samuppada, dependent origination, will bring about samasati, leading to samasamadhi, which are the 7 and the 8 factors of enlightenment, path factor of the Noble Eightfold Path. So Noble Eightfold Path has 8 path factor. Samasati and samasamadhi are the last two, the 7 and the 8. So this samasati and samasamadhi is very important. without meditation training, meditative training, you actually cannot realize this. But to realize enlightenment, especially the first two stage of enlightenment, means Sotapanna shift and Sakadagami, you don't really need to go full into your training of Samasati and Samasamadhi. You don't have to be very stable, because through listening, contemplative wisdom, you can develop them. But when it comes to Anagami stage and beyond, leading to Arahantship and Bodhisattvahood, you need Samasati leading to Samasamadhi. So Samasati and Samasamadhi are required. They are part of the four foundations of mindfulness. That's why after you have finished off step 7 of the Avijja Sutta, then only you move on to step 8. Step 8 is cultivation of the four foundations of mindfulness. After that, you will realize at least either Anagami or Arahantship. So that is the reason for all this understanding. The other thing that I need you all to understand is, you see, in cultivation, when you start to develop the cultivation, there are three stages to development of Dhamma. The Buddha called it the phases of Dhamma. Stage 1 or phase 1 is what he called Pariyatti. Pariyatti is the learning of the teaching. So the learning of the teaching can happen in many ways. First, you can listen to the true teaching, the Dhamma. That is first turning wisdom. You have the path, you connect, you awaken. Technically, you don't really need to meditate, just like during the time of the Buddha. They hear him speak the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the discourse, they awaken. And when Asaji spoke the two stanza, Venerable Sariputta also became a Sotapanna. So this first stage of sainthood is possible. So during the time of the Buddha, you have to listen to his teaching, his discourse. But nowadays, it's easier. We have writing, we have books, we have internet, then we have recordings. So now you can read about it, you can listen to it, then you can Google or do research on it. And there are many reference books or textbooks. So the teaching can be learned through all this new possibility because of advancement in technology and civilization. So the learning of the teaching has become a lot easier and more available. So this first phase of Dhamma, the learning is very important. After you have learned, what must you do? The Buddha said you have to move on to phase 2 of Dhamma. After you have learned the Dhamma or the teaching, you have to move on to Patipatti. You have to put them into practice or cultivation. So to put them into practice and cultivation, that is the actual cultivation. So under the cultivation, there are two aspects of wisdom that you have to develop. So when you put it into cultivation, means you got to go for the second turning wisdom. Second turning is Cittamaya Panya. You have to reflect, contemplate and inquire into why the Buddha say all this and how can I understand all this. When you contemplate and reflect into what he has taught us, then you can stabilize the understanding. then you can slowly assimilate them into your nature, then the understanding will prepare you to receive truth. So that is how Dhamma discussion can allow you to develop this contemplative wisdom. Then sometimes you on your own also you can reflect, contemplate and inquire. Yeah. But nowadays, because you can attend Dhamma class, you can ask questions, you can have Dhamma discussion session in group. So all this can help in the development of the phase 2 of Dhamma, the cultivation part, especially through the second turning. But after that, if you want to develop the penetrative wisdom or the awakening, you need to go for the turning, which is Bhavana Maya Panya. Bhavana Maya Panya is no more the first and second turning. It's the penetrative wisdom born of Bhavana, meditative discipline, or the actual meditation. So for that, you need to develop stability of mindfulness, awareness, sati. You need to realize your true mind, then stabilize your sati until it becomes samadhi, so that you can cultivate the meditative training, especially the four foundations of mindfulness, which includes the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path. So this third turning training is more extensive, but it's very penetrative. The moment you awaken, you will awaken, because this one is the direct seeing, the silent mind awaken, the silent mind insight into reality, into phenomena. Then you awaken to the three universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, anatta. But for you to have this penetrative awakening, especially when you cultivate the third turning, the four foundation of mindfulness and also the Noble Eightfold Path, if you are not ready with the appropriate initial wisdom we call Yoniso Manasikara, born of first and second turning wisdom, then it's not easy for the third turning to arise. The third turning wisdom need a strong base to awaken you. So this strong base, sometimes it depends on the individual too, that the individual's past cultivation or practices also determine on that. If you have your past, you can actually awaken even through first and second turning practices. Then you will connect to, then you will know how to develop the third turning cultivation, means Bhavana Maya Panya, third turning wisdom born of meditative training on your own. Technically, you don't need a teacher after that. Then you will reach back the stage of cultivation from where you actually stop. Then you will continue the cultivation from there onward to develop more understanding, means stability of wisdom and virtue, means your whatever meditative training to strengthen your karmic nature and your spiritual nature and bring them to perfection, especially your spiritual nature, are the work that you need to do to continue to develop this cultivation. So this part is what I want to add to what has been discussed. So hopefully you can develop the understanding. Okay, now we go back to the Q&A. The key to developing meditation is to develop the understanding of what meditation is. And this one also very important. You can use any method or technique, because method and technique never defines the meditation. Always remember that. They are just skillful means to anchor and train the mind in sati. But many cultivators need method and technique as an anchor to start with. There is no harm in doing those things. But understanding the real meaning of meditation as taught by the Buddha is most important. Then the method does not matter much, because the method is not the meditation. If you inquire sincerely by asking yourself, what is a method? You will come to understand that it is just a series of instructions to do things or to help you in the practice. Whichever method you use, may it be the breathing or anapanasati, mindfulness of the in and out breath, I can tell you that if you get 100 students or practitioners to do it, to do the so-called anapanasati or mindfulness of the in and out breath, they will all understand the practice differently and do it differently. Because human nature is like that. The instruction can be misinterpreted. Then it can be like the individual will assume that the instruction meant this and meant that, especially the word note. What do you mean by note? And all the methods and techniques are so different, they may think that they are different. But the fundamental understanding behind methods and techniques is very important. All these methods and techniques are needed because human beings, before they have the spiritual faculty developed, they tend to be heedless. They think a lot. So when they start to develop the meditation, they realize they cannot do the meditation because the spiritual faculty are not there. So this will condition the heedless thinking born of the opposite five mental hindrances. So when the mental hindrances are there, you think a lot. You become heedless. So they realize they have a problem. So they come up with method and technique is to, because they need something to hold the mind so that it's not heedlessly lost in thought. So this heedless thinking or heedless habitual thinking, they need to actually stop it through what? Through methods and technique. Where this method and technique will allow them to anchor their mind so that it does not wander off, so that they can do those instructions given to them to actually anchor this mind and develop mindfulness. That is the main intent. But some do not understand this. They use the object of meditation instead of developing mindfulness. They fix the mind, anchor it, and develop concentration of mind, one-pointedness, or absorption. So that is where the problem arises. When you do not have the understanding, you will deviate. So I will go back and read on that so that you can understand. They can have the same teacher giving them the same instruction, but when they sit to do anapanasati, a lot of different things will arise in their mind because of different interpretation and different understanding of the instruction and the topic. The mind is really very unpredictable unless it is very well trained. If the mind is not well trained, what you are doing may not be the real anapanasati. You may end up focusing on the breath, concentrating on the breath, and developing the absorption on the breath. The same goes for rising and falling of the atonement, or whichever method or technique you may use. It may be the dynamic meditation, Buddha, or chanting, or whatever. Cultivating a very stable daily mindfulness leading to sense restraint and the three way of right conducts are very important. These are all part of the Avijja Sutta. So without daily mindfulness, you actually not easy for you to develop the awakening and the understanding and the, have the ability to keep your precept and develop the sense restraint. Then without sense restraint, the three way of right conduct is impossible. So the key to understanding meditation is to develop this ability to cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness or satipatthana practices. With that, your sati or mindfulness will be very strong and very stable, and you will be able to develop the collectedness of mind, the unwavering mind, the firmness of mind. They call this mind that is collected and unwavering samadhi. So samadhi is not concentration, not one-pointedness. Samadhi is a free mind, collected and unwavering. Your mind will be very quiet. Your thought will be reduced, become less and less, as explained by me earlier on. So when you are able to develop the sati, you become more and more mindful, aware. Then when your sati stabilizes, it becomes samadhi. As you go through this training and this process, you will come to realize every time you are aware, you don't think. Every time you are mindful, you cannot think. Because our mind can only do one thing at a time. Either you are with the present moment aware of what is going on, means in sati, or you are lost in thought. It cannot be any other way. So if you are lost in thought, means you are no longer mindful, no longer aware. You have become heedless. That's why you cannot have a clear mind. You cannot have clarity. You cannot be aware of what is going on, which means you cannot develop meditation. You cannot awaken. You cannot develop the understanding to awaken or to insight into phenomena and become enlightened. So that is the reason why without sati and samadhi, you will think a lot. Your habitual tendency will come in. Your mental hindrance will condition you to be heedless. So to overcome all this, you need to train your mind to develop the five spiritual faculties. Saddha, virya, then sati, again mindfulness, then samadhi. These are spiritual faculties that you need. Without sati and samadhi, the last spiritual faculty of panya, wisdom, cannot arise. So initially, you need to have faith in the Buddha and his teaching, or in your teacher. Then after that, it will drive you to have the virya, the spiritual zeal of tenacity to cultivate. And this spiritual zeal, tenacity, will motivate you to cultivate sati, leading to samadhi. Then sati and samadhi will enable you to see things as they are clearly, to develop the cultivation, the awakening, the practices. So everything needs sati and samadhi. So saddha and virya are the initial spiritual faculty that you need to motivate you to move on to your training of the mind to develop sati and samadhi. Development of sati and samadhi is considered as the bhavana group, the meditative factor, power factor. That's why Noble Eightfold Path is actually sila, samadhi, and panya. The sila part is the right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood, together with the four right effort. Then the samadhi part is samasati and samadhi. Then wisdom part is right view, samaditi. So these three summarizes Noble Eightfold Path. So it always starts with right view, samaditi, because you need to have this spiritual faculty of wisdom to give rise to right view. Without the preliminary right view, you cannot start your cultivation. That when your view is wrong, it cannot arise right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. And the four right effort also will fall apart. The whole Noble Eightfold Path factor fall apart. So one unit is the three important spiritual right view to guide you. From there, you start with the, what we call the initial cultivation, learning the teaching, pariyatti, leading to patipatti, first, second, turning wisdom especially. Then finally, only you move into bhavanamaya panya, the turning wisdom. So this is how the sequence come about. So hopefully with this explanation, you all can develop the understanding. Then I will read on. According to the Patisyasamutpada, prevailing, if there is avijja, ignorant, mental activity or sankhara will continue to arise. That's why the first dueling is always avijja patya sankhara. And that is the reason why you think a lot, because of ignorance. You want to know, you want to experience, you think. So avijja patya sankhara. So if you do not develop wisdom to understand the five aggregates of form and mind, and the universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, and anatta clearly, it will be very difficult for you to develop the ability to weaken avijja or ignorance. But when you have developed the wisdom to straighten your view, you will have less sankhara and less thinking, leading to more clarity of mind. Finally, you will understand you only need to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, especially the four foundations of mindfulness, to develop deeper understanding of your form and mind to awaken. The four foundations of mindfulness, under its fourth foundation, Dhammanupassana, covers the cultivation of mindfulness of the five aggregates of form and mind. The first foundation, Kayanupassana, deals mainly with mindfulness of all kaya, or physical body, and its main purpose is to stabilize our daily mindfulness. And with that, it will be easier for you to develop the meditation. That's why under Kayanupassana, you have to develop Anapanasati first, followed by the four posture, mindfulness of four posture, then daily mindfulness. That's how you start. Okay, question two. Who are you? What are you? Is your feeling really you? Is your perception really you? Are your thoughts and your thinking really you? Are your sense consciousness really you? We have dealt with all these, have we not? Are they really you, your feeling, etc.? All those feelings you have experienced while living your life, are they really you? Not you, why? Why do you say it's not you? You have to develop your own understanding. Do not just say it because I told you so. What I have told you is very true because it can be understood. Means you can realize the understanding. It is just an inquiry within. So when you inquire within, then you will get the answer. That's why when you are in the meditation retreat, you have the contemplative mind that enables you to contemplate into the truth. Realization can come about. Wisdom can arise. It is exactly what I am trying to ask you to do. Do not take the answer for what it is, just because the Buddha proclaimed it or I say it. When he said dukkha is this, this and this, do not just believe. And do not just say, oh, I already know that. Life is suffering. Then you never learn unless your parami is very strong, like some of those famous monks during the time of the Buddha. That is to say, upon hearing the sutta, they become enlightened. But if you do not have such kind of parami, if your past is not that strong to support you, then try to develop your own understanding. This is important because you may have to ask, why is this feeling not me? Because when I feel something, it appears so real. When there is pain, it is so real. But because it comes and goes, that's the reason why it's not you or not so real. And because when I have this pain, after a while the pain disappears and I did not die. That's the reason why pain is not you, feeling is not you. Feeling come and go, you didn't die. Pain arise and pass away, you didn't die. Then another feeling arise, a more pleasant feeling may arise, and another maybe more pleasant feeling may also arise. And because I do not die, it clearly shows that this feeling is not me. So the same goes for perception. If one moment I perceive something, the next moment I perceive another thing. For example, the TV, the car, or whatever. Every time perception changes, did I die? I did not die. Likewise, our thinking, every thought that arise and pass away, you never die. Thought come and go, consciousness come and go, your hearing, smell, taste, tactile, and thinking, they come and go. So if they are not you, then how do they arise in you? Then who are you? What are you? How come the five aggregates of form and mind continuously arise in me if they are not me? I have been trying to make you all understand this through explanation with analogy that are as simple as I can think of. The purpose of asking all these questions is to help you develop the inquiry mind. If it's not you, then what is it? Then how come it arises together with all five aggregates of form and mind? How come it's always there? At the beginning of my sharing or Dhamma talk, I said that you will learn to see how form and mind arise in you, how thoughts and feelings arise in you with every moment of sense experience, of sense or consciousness, and how they condition you into further thinking, further reaction, and how your mind stir and react to sense experience. So all this, you will see them. Especially your thoughts, how they condition your feelings first, and in turn your feeling condition further wrong thought. If you are not mindful and you have not developed the wisdom, the initial wisdom, yonisok manasikara, to enable you to detach by accepting them for what they are, clinging or attachment will arise. And dukkha is going to be the end result. I will give you all a hint on how to understand the five aggregates of form and mind clearly. Feeling is not you because feeling changed and you did not die. All the aggregates of mind changes and you also didn't die. So what can they be? It is something that follows you and is not you, then what can it be? So that is the hint. You go and reflect on it and contemplate on it. Then I think somebody gave the answer which is quite good. He answered, it's just a phenomenon. That is one of the answers and it's quite close. Because phenomena is condition arising. Is that not the case? Sense consciousness is also condition arising. There is the mind, there is the sense data, and there is the sense organ. Upon contact, the respective sense door consciousness arises. So it is condition arising. What does it mean? It means it's born of nature's creation, following nature's law. Is that not so? When the condition comes together, it arises. If it's born of condition, and it only arises when condition comes together, then it is not a permanent unchanging entity. That is why it is not you, for it comes and it goes. If you look clearly into this, and your nature, there is another aspect within you. Listen to this. That has nothing to do with all this phenomena, but is responsible for the arising, for the creation of all this. That is, you have to find out what that thing is. Yeah. I have already explained that one. And all of meditation is to realize that. So this one is something you have to realize through your meditation. There is another aspect of mind that is beyond these five aggregates of form and mind within your nature that is responsible for the arising of all this. So I have given hint until there, you still cannot follow. Yes. Karmic. Karmic nature is one of them. Because a lot are caused by karmic past and karmic activity. And they can cause many things to arise. That is the karmic nature within us. We will deal with that later. Because that part is more abstract and is very different. What I can tell you is that all these are byproduct of that nature. Actually, it's your true mind, your true nature. All these are creation, created by the mundane mind, the thinking mind, the one that creates all the delusion of form and mind and phenomena. Delusion is ignorant. Mahayana Buddhists have a very good analogy to explain this. They give the analogy of an innkeeper. You are the owner of the inn. You will take care of the inn. You are always there. So your true mind, your awareness is always there. Your awareness nature. Whereas the guests that come and stay, they will come and go. Let us say this hotel has 6 rooms. And every time there is a tenant or someone coming to stay, they will occupy one of these rooms. These rooms are equivalent to your 6 sense door. All these guests come and go because they are not the owner. They are only there to stay for a while or a night. But upon contact, the sense door consciousness arises quickly. They do not even stay overnight or in a split second. They may be gone. They come and they go. And because of that, they are the byproduct of your true mind. They are not your true mind. Because all these are dependent originating, arising due to causes and conditions. And there must be the sense data, sense organ, and the consciousness or the mind, the three conditions required for them to arise. That's why they are called phenomena, dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomena. What happens if the sense data ceases to be? When you switch off all the vibration, the power, the current, all this sound, echo sound, vibration, my voice, is there any more hearing? No, no more. There is no more hearing consciousness. That hearing consciousness is no more. But what is it that is aware of that cessation of the hearing consciousness? It is the essence of mind, right? There actually is only one mind. But because of the 6 sense organ and the 6 internal sense data and 6 external sense data, the 6 type of corresponding sense consciousness come to be. 6 plus 6 plus 6 gave rise to the 18 sense drive and created the world and the universe. But there are one aspect within you. Sorry, there is one aspect within you that exists no matter whether there is sense organ, sense data or not. Whether there is anything coming or going, it is always there. It is that which can give rise to sati or mindfulness, the awareness nature. It is the mindfulness that enables you to aware. It is before the perception. Perception is creation already, coming out of it already. It is already the mundane mind, but that nature within you, which is just aware of the arising or non-arising of the sense or consciousness of hearing or sound, is a totally different nature within you. It is also anatta. It is also not you, but it does not depend on anything. That's why without condition, it is aware. Aware of silence. Silence is without condition. So this aspect, if you meditate, you will develop the understanding. But when you develop your training, your cultivation to a level where your mindfulness can be very stable and your wisdom starts to arise, and when your penetrative wisdom or penetration of truth reaches a certain level, your thinking will naturally become less and less. But it is just like what the Buddha said. It is avijja that creates sankhara, or ignorance that creates thinking or mental activity. So when that goes, or ignorance is attenuated or reduced, or become less, your mental activity also slow down and become less. When this happens, you will have less distraction caused by the thinking mind, the mundane mind. Your seeing will become clearer, and you will have the ability to see nature as it is, as it really is. You will also be able to see the flow of nature. The moment is arising, means the phenomena is arising, is sustained and flow, leading to cessation, to its cessation. All this you will start to see clearly, until it becomes very clear. The three universal characteristics of anicchang, dukkang, and anatta also become very clear. And when you see truth, you will always see, because truth is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. The characteristics of nature are there, are always there. And if you see, you will always see. That is why you have to develop this ability to see. Not until you can really develop the understanding through the right seeing or direct seeing, you will not understand all this that I described above. That is the reason why the second turning of the first noble truth states that this dukkha is to be understood. Do not underestimate its importance. Do not think that it is just a first noble truth of suffering and it is not important. It is key to understanding all the subsequent truth, the second noble truth, the third noble truth, etc., and the realization of almost everything. Because through this understanding of the form and mind, you will actually penetrate. You can actually penetrate. Do you have any other question? Then there is a third question. Yeah, question by Sister Lai. A lot of Mahayana teaching seems very abstract. You cannot understand. Even the Heart Sutta's proclamation of form is emptiness, emptiness is form, is very difficult for many people to understand. Not only they cannot understand, they cannot even accept what is being said. They say, how can you say that form is emptiness? Form is form. But when you understand what I had already taught you, that form is unreal, and it is there because of condition, as form are condition-arising entity, then you will understand why form is actually emptiness, and emptiness is form. That is why our sister line here is trying to ask. In the Zen tradition, they always say, if you see water, that is not water. If you see mountain, that is not mountain. Because they are referring to your wrong seeing or mundane seeing. The Surangama Sutta has a very good saying to explain this. Listen to this carefully. It is stated in the Surangama Sutta, perception of form is consciousness, whereas its non-perception is wisdom. This one is very powerful. You better pay attention. If you can understand this, I salute you. Means you already have the wisdom. Perception of form is consciousness. You can awaken to this. You are beautiful. Whereas its non-perception is wisdom. This is very, very penetrative. And you need to awaken to understand this, to realize this. I've already taught you all this. Mind is a foreigner of all things. When mind arises, everything arises. So everything you see and perceive is your consciousness. Because within consciousness, there is the content of consciousness, which are your five mental aggregates of form and mind that created the world and everything else that you come to perceive. All knowing comes from mind. That is why the Buddha said the most important part within your mind is sankhara. That is the reason why he said sabbe sankhara anicchang, all of sankhara are impermanent. And he continued, sabbe sankhara dukkang, all of sankhara leads to suffering. If you have attachment to them. Then sabbe dhamma anatta, all of sankhara, the conditioned and the unconditioned, they are all anatta, because dhamma here includes the conditioned and the unconditioned, which are also anatta, non-self, and it is not you. The other thing that I want you to understand is that the ability to understand the five aggregates of form and mind can enable you to free your mind from the delusion of self. This is very important. That is how you gain realization of the first stage of sainthood. Self-delusion, sakrality is rooted out and overcome when you have penetrated with understanding that these five aggregates of form and mind are not real and it's not you. Then your understanding of anatta will become very clear, and with that, the self-delusion or delusion of self can be rooted out. And then, it is possible to develop the real understanding. That is the reason why understanding of the five aggregates of form and mind as not you, are not really you, is very important, because they arise due to condition, and they are condition arising phenomena. Hence, no more self-delusion. So this one even refer to our human being, the first aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind. Because this human being is not what you think, except this phenomenon lasts longer, you never see it. It's actually supported by three conditions, supporting conditions. Once any of these supporting conditions cease to be, you cease to be. That's why separation of consciousness from the form will give rise to what they call death. Then your identity erased. Then I end the session by asking, do you all have any more questions? If not, let us end. Thank you. Then there is your sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, good. At least we finished this book. So now we will open up for the second session, meditation reporting, followed by Q&A or Dhamma sharing. It's Dhamma in daily life. Okay, quick one. You got maybe 12 to 15 minutes. Okay. Whoever wants to report meditation can come in or ask questions or do any sharing. Anyone? Show your hand or put up your sign. Oh, today Sue of New Zealand is here. Wow, very good. Why not we call Sue? Sue, are you there? Sue, can you hear? Can you unmute your mic, Sue? I think she can't hear us. Never mind, we will get somebody else. That day, the last person to share is PG, is it? Was it PG? Oh, Queenie, yeah. Oh, Queenie. Queenie, you can nominate somebody. Penny?
Yes,
you can nominate somebody. Oh, Sue is in, yeah. Sue, are you in?
Yeah.
Yeah, Sue. Ah, okay, we go back to Sue, Penny. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Someone
can get
to
feel it. Yeah, we have missed your voice too. Long time haven't heard from you. How are you?
Disconnected.
Oh, she got disconnected. I see. Never mind, we wait for Sue to come back. Okay, we go back to Peggy, huh? Or we go back to Queenie, huh?
Let me see.
Yeah.
Who to nominate?
We got about 11 of us here. Just now was 12.
Okay. Can I nominate Man Yen?
Can. Man Yen, are you there? Manyan?
Oh, brother.
Yes, Manyan.
Hi, brother.
Yeah.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon. I can hear you very clear.
Okay.
Yeah.
Brother, maybe I can share my meditation just now.
Very good, Sadio. You can report now. Share.
So, I can feel my heartbeat.
Oh, very good, Sadio.
Yeah. And also, there are other vibrations in other parts of the
body. No problem,
so.
No problem. Whichever that is prominent, you stay there. Stay there.
So
and
I will stay there. But then, I feel that when I have thoughts, then I will follow the thoughts. And when I follow the thoughts, those vibrations, I don't feel it anymore.
Definitely. I already told you, you can only do one thing at a time. Either you are lost in thought, or you are aware of what is going on. Means that heartbeat, or that vibration, that is meditation. So you are doing it correctly. So that is the understanding. Your mind can only do one thing at a time. Either is aware, means that is your true mind. Do you understand? When you are aware, the awareness that is aware of whatever before the word come out, you may call it the heartbeat, the vibration or what, but it's the awareness nature, that true mind that is aware. So you only need to be aware, that's it, finish. Don't try to know. Aware, finish. Aware, finish. So aware to stabilize the awareness nature. Then when it is lost in thought, because you haven't stabilized it, that's why you come to realize it drifts away very fast. It follows the thinking, then you are no longer aware of your heartbeat or your whatever vibration that you are able to be aware. When you are able to be aware of your heartbeat and other parts of your body, it means your mindfulness has become better, more stable. Otherwise, you cannot experience that. Because without the stethoscope, for a person to have the awareness, you need to train. You really need to silence your mind and allow the awareness to stabilize. And then when it has sufficient training, it will become quiet enough for you to become aware of whatever that you want to be aware of. So if you stay at the heart, the first thing is of course your heartbeat or any vibration around it. Then when you lie down, whichever part of your body that comes into contact with the pillow or your mattress or what, you can actually feel the vibration. That's why our whole body is full of vibration, heartbeat, the pulse of life. You will come to be aware of all those things. So awareness is the true mind that can let you develop understanding, the awakening, the witnessing of everything that is happening. Yeah. So you can continue with your description. What happened after you say you come to know that when you are thinking or follow the thought, you are no longer aware. You continue. Yeah. Very good.
So, that I'm thinking, but it's not immediately lah. I mean, I will like something. Then when I realize, then quickly I relax, and then I can feel the vibration again.
Yes.
But it's not always like that.
Sometimes,
I feel that I don't have thinking, and there are vibrations, but then eventually, like, there is no vibration anymore, and I don't feel anything anymore, but I don't detect that I am thinking also. So, that part, I'm not sure what I'm doing.
No. That part is very important, because when you are able to feel your vibration, initially you realize that vibration is very gross. It's like pounding. Very loud.
Yeah.
Then after you are able to stabilize it there, it will become more and more quiet. More and more quiet. Until finally you cannot perceive it or feel it because your mindfulness is not refined enough. You continue to stay there, silent, aware. Don't do anything. Don't go and listen to those people tell you to do sitting, touching. Forget about it. Then don't arise any thought or thinking. Because just now you mentioned, which is very good, you don't feel, the awareness doesn't feel the pulsation of the heart or the vibration. Then it also knows that there is no thought. That is very good. Yeah. But sometimes you have to be very careful because these thoughts, they move very fast. They are very subtle. So the thought that tells you I have no thought, that one is the thought. So no thought is actually a thought. But who tells you there is no thought? It's the thought that is aware that there is no thought. So that one is not the correct one. The correct one is the awareness is aware that everything has become very quiet, very still. So you must experience the tranquility of mind, the stillness of mind. Everything becomes very quiet. And that is the real no thought. The one you describe one is you haven't reached that stage. You are just trying to develop the understanding, the experience. But you have not stabilized the sati. That's why continue to silent and don't try to know. Don't do anything, just be with it. Like Kogun's understanding, be with it. The heartbeat like no more, never mind. Like anapanasati, like very subtle breathing, no more, stay with it. Until mind enters sati. When mind enters sati, you will understand what I say. Then your mind become very different. Yeah. Then after you come out of that meditation, you start to experience a lot of things that you never experienced before. When mind enters sati, everything is in sati. But most people cannot maintain it because they don't know what this thing is. Like you mentioned just now, I don't know what is it. I don't know what to do after that. That's why that is the doubt. Why must you have doubt? Everything that you experience during meditation is wisdom, understanding. It's part of the way. What I need to understand is, what is meditation? What is meditation? Meditation is to develop the ability to realize our true mind, which is sati, leading to the stability of it to be heedful, to be aware. Well, the moment I am heedful, I can meditate. That's why the Buddha say heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. So I have to train this mind until I am ever mindful, constantly meditative. Means I am always heedful. So how to start? I have to develop the understanding to train my mind to be mindful first. Then stabilize it to be ever mindful. Then use it to investigate, to meditate, to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, to be constantly meditating, to contemplate, to inquire, to reflect. So all this is meditative training. Patipati, putting the Dhamma into cultivation. So today, you have given rise to the condition which is very good for you to understand. So I rejoice with your ability to reach your present level of meditation, which is very good. So continue to silence your mind. Don't try to know. Can you follow? Huh? Yeah?
Yes.
The sound is not so clear. You have to put it nearer the mic.
What I'm saying is, sometimes I find when I don't feel anything anymore, I have the feeling that, but I just want to get up and the
Your sound is not clear, Amayan. Can you use the mic?
No, I think it's the
internet.
You need I use my earphone, is it?
Wait.
The
earphone. Okay.
Go on, brother. Yeah, better now.
Yes, better now. Yeah.
What I'm saying is, sometimes when I say that I meditate and then later on I don't feel the vibration anymore, right?
Yes.
I would have this feeling of not wanting to continue anymore, and then I would just get up. So I think that's the part where I need to.
Yeah, that's what I am trying to explain to you. Well, you don't know what to do after that. Understand?
Yeah.
So that is the doubt. Because you don't know what it is. That's why it does not interest you. And you don't know what is meditation. I explained just now, you listen again, like anapanasati. When your anapanasati become very smooth, very continuous, initially it's long breath. Then the mindfulness is there. Mindfulness of the in and out breath. So when you aware, the heartbeat is the same. When the heartbeat initially very gross, pounding. Then as you stabilize the mindfulness, then it moves together with the habit. It will be able to be aware of this, the so-called pounding, the rising and the falling, or the arising of habit and the ceasing of the habit. But as you relax into it, silent everything, that habit will slow down, slow down, slow down. Then the pounding will become like more and more subtle, more and more. Until one day, it become very quiet, and it become too subtle. You cannot feel it. And that is a very good sign of progress. When you cannot feel it, it's like anapanasati. The long breath also become like very quiet, very, very tranquil, very still. Just the mindfulness. So what happened is, during that time, the mindfulness has become more and more refined, but it has reached a stage where this breathing will also slow down until it becomes very subtle, like no more breathing, like everything stops. Then the mindfulness find it very difficult to follow because it has not developed the ability to have the ability to be aware of this very subtle breathing. That one require more refined mindfulness, more stable mindfulness. So what happened is, stay there. Don't panic. Tell yourself, this is a good sign of progress. Now I need to develop the ability to let my mind become more quiet, more still, and the sati become more refined until the mind itself enters sati. When mind enters sati, means the mind is aware of every movement, every arising, not necessary movement. Even when it's very still, no more movement, the tranquility, the stillness, the awareness, everything. The mind that is in sati, means that has entered sati, is just aware that every movement, every action, every arising of sankhara or thought process, it is aware. So you need to do that, stabilize that. So continue to silent and stay there. Don't try to know.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Very good. Sadhu. Rejoice. Okay. Let us rejoice. Sadhu.
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 Okay. Then we will do the sharing of merits, the transfer of merit. Then after that, we have 5 or 10 minutes of fellowship. Akasata Chirpumata Devanaga Mahindika Punyantang Anumoditwa Chirang Rakantu Loka Sasana Itta Wata Chamehi Sampadan Punya Sampadan Sabbe Deva Anumodantu Sabasampati Siriya Idang Menya Tinang Hotu Sugita Hontunya Teyo Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Devo wasatu kalena swasa sampadihetu cha. Vito bawatu loko cha. Raja bawatu damiko. Imina punyang kamina. Mame bala samagamo, satang samagamo hotu, yawa nivana patiya, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Sakyamuni Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones. Then we will end the video session. We will have our fellowship session. Okay, now it's fellowship, you can just come in. This is informal session, you can share whatever you want. Anybody? Anybody? You can just come in,
Hello, Amitofo, brother.
Amitofo, Sadhu,
yes. I want to ask the next Sunday, what will be the book?
Oh, okay. We will use this book, it will be good if you all can maybe read up a bit first, I think I will go to this one. Understanding the meditation as taught by the Buddha, part one, This is about meditation. This is based on the Thursday class transcript book, dated 12 September 2013. So there is a part 1 and a part 2. So we will continue with these two first. Can you all see this blue book? Understanding the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Can you all see? Is it clear?
Yes.
Good. Okay. Yeah, Pucheng, you can continue.
Sadhu, I'd like to share a little bit about my meditation.
Good. Sadhu.
Yes.
Yes.
Actually, this meditation was kind of interesting in a way because last Thursday I didn't have much time because I was very busy doing a lot of stuff. Going out. But I wanted so much to meditate. So I only have 5 minutes. But never mind, I said I will push for it 5 minutes because I wanted to attend your class, so I didn't want to be late. And then I had to take dinner. So I only have 5 minutes, man.
Very good.
It was so amazing in that short 5 minutes.
Yeah, you can do it because you have the ability.
Yes, I was able to do something that came out so interesting. But you see, I said I don't have much time, so finally, I said I will relax.
Yeah. I will relax and then do metta meditation.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I relax. After I relax very quickly, and then after that, I do the metta meditation, you know. The meditation, metta, right? So, I tell you, I read the book that you shared about
metta
yes. meditation
metta
before.
Metta meditation.
Ago, yes. Like,
yeah, 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 yeah. The blue
okay.
book, yeah.
So, I just, I do a very short one, you know, because I don't have time. So, I do a very short one. Towards the end, right, for whatever reason, my mind just thought of the oneness nature, you know.
Wow, sadhu. Very
and
good. Yeah.
So that suddenly, my heart, the awareness came out, you know.
Sadhu.
Came out and the energy was so soothing.
Sadhu. Very good.
And it just came out. That's, wow, you know.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
so soothing. And,
that is the real metta. That is the real metta. From the heart.
Yeah.
That one, the non-human can feel. Very strong. It's a very soothing energy coming out from the heart.
Soothing
yeah.
energy come out. Yeah. I tell you, it's so
your,
amazing.
Miss, your metta is very genuine. Very, very genuine.
Yeah. It just come out from the heart. You know,
sadhu to you.
The meditation, you can see the heart, the energy coming out.
Yeah. It's like out. Something flowing
so
out. Very soothing.
Out. So soothing, so good.
It's
amazing.
Full of metta. Yeah.
Yes. Wow, that was like, because I don't have much time, I just and this energy come out.
Yeah.
So soothing, you know.
And now, very strong. Yeah.
Yes. It was like so amazing, you know.
Yeah. Then that time when you really rejoice and retreat is like the oneness nature, the whole of nature will receive that type of pure metta. And it's very beautiful. And during that time, you can try. When you radiate metta to someone, that person will turn around and look at you. Very different.
Okay.
You can try it out.
But because I was doing that, I wasn't with anybody, so it just come out the energy.
Correct. What I mean is, with your ability now, and this one may not last very long, but it will last long enough as long as you continue with the metta cultivation and practice. Then when you go out, or when you are somewhere, maybe quiet place or what, then there are people around. That person may not be facing you, the back against you. You try. You radiate metta to that person. I tell you, that person will turn around and look at you. You can try it. Last time I tried it. At first, somebody walking towards me. So I tried. I know that lady was thinking. But suddenly he stopped and he raised his head and looked at me. And when I smile, he can feel that type of energy. Then she also feel very curious. Smile back, but don't understand why she was doing that. Then at first I thought maybe in front easier. So there was another occasion, somebody walking in front of me. And I radiate. That person stopped thinking and turned around and looked at me. I was behind that person. He turned around and he looked at me and smiled. Then I also smiled. It's very powerful. Then that dog, the one in Melbourne, at that time, my metta was very strong. I radiated to that dog. That dog can feel. And he came to me, that dog, the tail wagging. Then I stroked his head. That dog was very big dog. What is it, a husky? Like Christie one. No, like Christie's dog. It's more like Christie. It's a husky, I think. Well, I only know a husky is like that one, a very big one. Oh, that one was the fur. Wow, really. You got the condition, you can give it a try, for saying sadhu to you.
Sadhu, right?
So
this one was like, it's just read it all, but
anybody receive or not, I don't know lah. The other theory, you know,
they will receive yeah. one, but that one from the heart one is very different one, very, yeah. very genuine.
It's like something very out. I mean, extraordinary.
Yeah, extraordinary. Yeah. It's very soothing yeah. one from there. Come on.
Yes, yes. Oh. Yeah, you actually can see it.
Yeah, can feel it. Out, and see. It's very soothing. Yes. Come on, huh? Yes, and the energy, is very different. There is the highest metta that living being can do.
Actually, when you talk about who we are sharing, right, we yeah. cannot tell, we cannot imagine how is it like until we do it.
Yeah, until you do it, yes.
Yeah. Then now I know what is it like, huh?
Yeah.
When you share this kind of thing to
correct, you, correct, to right, other people.
I know exactly
yeah.
what you mean by
yeah, yeah, yeah.
metta energy.
Yeah,
huh?
yeah, yeah. yeah.
It's really extraordinary.
Yeah, extraordinary. You know? Huh.
Yeah,
this is
not something that you can create.
Cannot. Huh. This is yeah. beyond your thinking mind, beyond your thought.
Yes.
This is from your nature come out. Huh.
Yes. Correct. The nature come out by itself.
Yeah, by itself.
You cannot create through your
thinking. Cannot. Mind through the thinking, cannot.
Yeah, it's just beyond your mind.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, you see, the wonderful thing about meditation, when you do it, something extraordinary.
Yeah, it keeps on manifesting because you have the ability, you have reached that level of training, you have located the gateway and you have the ability to go in. That's why all this become possible. Before that, cannot be done. That's why other people, you want to do it also, you cannot. So this is the beauty of meditation. In Mandarin, they say, very wonderful, ao miao. So it's really wonderful. That's why, like you say, it's very amazing, very unique, and very
extraordinary.
Huh? It's really, the real meditation is like that. Because when it arrives, it's really, people cannot understand, people cannot
it's
imagine.
Beyond your thinking mind.
Yeah, beyond the thinking mind. It's really extraordinary. That's why it's so beautiful. I rejoice, my nature rejoices.
Yeah, rejoice.
Thank you so much for the sharing.
When you share, we don't really know what is that. Just know that there's something, amazing and wondrous. But when it happened to you,
then you will understand what I mean. Very differently.
So different understanding of each other, you know.
Correct. Rejoice. Very good.
Sadhu.
Okay, yes. I think we can end the Zoom session because it's almost 6:18 already.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Amitabha.
Yeah, sadhu. So let us rejoice and we end. Sadhu. Thank you for participating.
Good evening.
Yes. Yeah. Have a good dinner after this. We'll end the whole Zoom. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.